Hi everyone. So rightly there is concern about the stock market because it's declining. And the big question is, with the breathless headlines, is it going to continue falling and crashing down on us? Or how worried should we be? How bad can it get? Now I'm going to give you a slightly different analysis to what you're used to. This is the S&P 500 since 1990. And you can see periods when it's gone up, I've marked those in purple, and prolonged periods such as the 2002 crash, well, 2000 to 2002 crash, and the 2008 to 2009 crash as well. And then the rally since 2009 when interest rates went effectively to zero, and the acceleration since the market bottomed out with COVID and how it's actually gone even higher quicker. Now, some people think we'll have a 50% drop on the S&P 500. And there's two ways of looking at this. If we do get a 50% drop, and I've marked on here what that would look like from current levels, it would actually only take us to where we were in March 2020. Does that mean the drop could be even further? Well, let's look at the thesis why it will or it won't, and what the probabilities are. There are no certainties. The markets move based on a collective of human decisions, and a lot of those humans haven't made any decisions yet as to which way it might go. Okay. Equally, you can see how a 39% drop could happen over the space of basically a year. However, look how long it took for the market to get back to where it was at the 2008 peaks. It actually ended up taking, well, about 5 years from that 2008 peak for it to return there. That doesn't mean all stocks moved in tandem. So let's, given that we've got some context and a 50% drop doesn't look improbable, given it only takes us back to where we were just recently, and some might even argue, why can't we go even further lower? The next question is, well, wait a minute, even if this fall is short and sharp, what if it takes ages to get back to where we were? So how worried should we be? Do we say to ourselves, let's just get out of the market for the next 5 years? Well, let's look at the data, okay? We've got used to that during COVID, so let's look at the data. Now, if we look at this again, it's the S&P 500. I've tried to put four different scenarios and the probabilities assigned to each of those. Those probabilities necessarily have to be guesswork to many degrees. So scenario A is, well, the market just keeps on the trend. You can see the purple line that it's been on recently. It's fallen back a little bit, but it just keeps to trend. I think there's only a 15% probability of this smoothly happening, but it might be the one that actually ends up happening. B, which I think is most likely, is it falls back to the line you see there that I've drawn in red and then I've extended. It's a line which started pretty much in July 2011, so there's a long pedigree. It's longer term trend, and I suspect the probability of this is higher. So the market falls from its current levels of what, 4,800 ish, to just under 4,000, which is still a significant shift down. It's about a 25% drop. Okay, so it eases off a lot of the pressure. All the panic sellers get to sell. The long-term holders are still happy because they say to themselves it could be worse. It could have been point C. Option C is where it falls back more sharply. Example, Russia goes into Ukraine. The United States declares war on the Russians, and all sorts of other things happen. The market basically starts overreacting. It's the end of the world. And that's, I put probability 15%. And remember, that's still not a 50% drop. That still doesn't take us down to where we were in March. Now, point D, which is what the most pessimistic people are saying, I think there's only a 10% probability of that, which is that 50% fall, in which case there'll be many bargains. The probability of that, I put at 10%. I liken that somewhat to what happened in February 2020 when COVID took hold, and in that month the market fell very sharply. Obviously not 50%, but it fell very sharply. People then got into a whole load of stocks, bigger, safer companies, and made their money back very quickly. So in all these scenarios, it still becomes a stock picker's market. Because of these probabilities, you still want to be picking the right stocks. Well, how might we go about that? That's a separate issue. But let's just look at the data of what has tended to happen. These are the 30 stocks in the Dow. How did they do in the last crash. So what I've put on this column here is the price percentage change in 2008, when the last big crash happened. How did these companies, which are in today's Dow Jones 30 Industrial Average, do then? And I've also marked at the time of writing, these are the price moves. Now, even if you're watching this, I don't know, into the future from now, whenever you see the markets falling over a period, you might want to refer back to this. Okay, so this is meant to be perennial. Well, here are the lessons from that. What lessons can we draw? Well, when the markets fell, very few stocks went up. So those of you who are thinking, oh no, just tell me the stock which will go up and counter that market move. And remember, these were stocks, everything from companies that sell sportswear to companies that make semiconductors and drugs. So you can't say, oh, I'll just diversify away. Secondly, even the biggest companies can drop 50%. Have a look at that. Some of the biggest companies, you might think, oh, it's okay, I'm going to trust my money to a fund manager and he'll find the big, best, safe companies. Maybe he'll put it in an Apple. Well, that was down 56%. Oh, maybe Apple was the problem. Oh, he'll put it in a Goldman Sachs. That was down 60%. By the way, it's still around. United Health Group, multi-billion dollar company, one of the 30 Dow Jones composites, you know, stalwart, down 54%. But of course, the third lesson is most people underestimate how much a giant can fall or that a giant can bounce back. So they start panicking because they underestimated how much it can fall. When it does fall, they think, oh my God, it's the end of the world, not realizing that's the norm. And then they think, oh, well, that company I'll never touch again, because they don't realize how quickly those resilient companies bounce back. Okay. And yes, they rebound often. Fallers may have nothing to do with the cause of the crash. And that's important. People who think you can just diversify away, give their money to a fund manager, or just buy lots and lots of stocks. Well, companies fall which have nothing to do with the crash. Goldman Sachs had a lot to do with the crash. It was down 60% because those linked most closely to the crash are likely to fall the most. That's common sense. Home Depot, which had less to do with the crash, but the worry was people will have less money to spend, fell 14%. Yeah, McDonald's actually went up. I don't know. Somebody might be able to explain that. Maybe the idea was we're all going to be so poor we can only afford to eat at McDonald's. Not to say that only poor people eat at McDonald's, but it's cheaper than eating at most other places. Okay, so what about the S&P 500? Were there any winners then at that time? So again, I've put a column of the stocks during the last financial crisis. And these are the 500 largest American companies. Doesn't mean the same thing will happen again. And how they've done in the past 2 weeks when there's been some big falls and people are worried. So one lesson could be, you know what? Yes, there are some which went up. They won't necessarily be the same ones who go up this time. And this could just be the start of the fall. It might be. But it's to say, yes, there can be some rises. There are very few, by the way, I'm sorry to say, which will rise. Well, surely indices and index trackers were told, listen, don't try and pick stocks, just follow the indices. Well, guess what? You'd be wrong to think they don't do big falls, because look what happened last time. So the NASDAQ was down 41%, right? Forget Mumbai and Shanghai. You might think that's high risk. I'm not even bothered about that. What about the world index? So that's a basket of stocks. So those who think I'll just buy lots and lots and lots of stocks. Okay, world index, Europe excluding UK, all world index, Europe excluding UK, so it's Europe, 48% down. FTSE all world, 43% down. And that's got a heck of a lot of stocks in it. Okay, the Japanese index, 42%. The FTSE 250, that's the 250 largest stocks outside the 100 largest, down 40%. 500 companies in that portfolio of the S&P 500, down 38%. The Dow, just 30 stocks, down 33%. So whether you had 500 or you had 30, you still got massive losses, even tracking an index. So what's the answer? Well, if you want certainty, get a bank account. If you want to be happy, get a dog. Maybe the answer is exchange-traded funds then, not just index trackers, but funds which track other things. So which of the funds, again, when the market collapsed, did well? Well, it so happens some actually did, and they're doing well in the last 2 weeks as well. There was a move to gold. These are not picks, because I'm not sure, actually, whether gold will. I'm not sure at all. I'd have to look at it some more. Of course, those specialist high-risk exchange-traded funds like the ultra short QQQ, which I think goes up 3% for every 1% the NASDAQ falls. So it's very high risk. Went up. Okay, so there was commodity and gold. Bonds, treasury bonds. Doesn't mean the same thing will happen again. Treasury bonds went up. Maybe we want to look at inflation-linked bonds because we're expecting inflation. That's the cause of the crash. Surely that'll be the one which will do better. I will investigate this. 33% up last time. That's interesting. Okay, so there are things worth investigating. The answer is not simply, let me just get triple leverage, 7 to 10 year US treasuries, which are, US treasuries are some of the safest, and we'll apply leverage to them. So we get, look at that, it's only 7% volatility, but we try and get some of the big gains because that hardly moves. So it's something worth investigating for me to do, and I'll do a separate video on it. Tips, by the way, are inflation related bonds again. So the idea is if inflation goes up, the government's going to compensate you for that inflation. You might think, my God, where have you been hiding this genius material? It's not that simple, okay? And there's certainly no guarantee they'll be the ones to go up. Now, surely fund managers did well, you might ask. Well, no, look at this. That's the price between, again, in that last crash, not even big names like JP Morgan, right? They're supposed to have all the best information, aren't they? Well, BlackRock, which is the world's largest asset manager, okay, its fund, the Greater European Investment Fund, fell 26%. Witten, well-known, 26%. Fidelity, well-known, 26% down. JP Morgan, Baillie Gifford. Right? Now, you might say, well, you just picked some of the worst ones. No, actually, there were very few investment trusts which went up at all that year. Very few, like hardly any. And they were the type that either don't exist now. And by the way, the ones which have been doing fairly well over the last couple of years, they didn't exist at the last crash. The fund management industry is clever. It tries not to keep a large track record because it knows it'll be pretty poor. And so it keeps reinventing new funds and marketing new things without a history. So for those of you thinking, well, that's fine. I won't go into any of the new funds. I won't go into some of the old ones, which all did poorly last time. What I'll do is I'll just go with the company names like a JP Morgan. Well, I'm sorry. They'll just help you go down as well. And you might say, well, at least they didn't go down as much as the 33% of the market. Market went down 33%, they went down 27%. That's not really good comfort, is it? So what are our options? Okay, well, option one, if you're risk-loving, you put yourself into three categories. Am I risk-loving, risk-neutral, or risk-averse? If you're risk-loving, then you will argue, I'm going to stay in the market because if I miss the five best days of the market, history shows that I will actually be significantly worse off. So it's better always to be in the market. This is the sort of Warren Buffett approach to investing. And again, your reasoning is it's not so overvalued. Look, the price earnings ratio compared over the last 10 years isn't particularly overly valued. In other words, the price you're paying for every pound in profits or every dollar in profits a company makes. And let's not forget, whilst market cap, i.e. the stock market, has risen sharply, so have profits of companies, which is very different to what had happened in previous crashes, you might argue. Profits are rising and revenues have been gradually rising. So you might say that the valuations are not overly extended. Okay, you'd also argue, as I said, timing is not a good idea, and you might pick some hedging ETFs. Like I said, you might say, well, I'm risk loving, so I'll short the S&P 500 two times leverage. That's very risky. That's very risky, trying to time and trade the S&P 500 without any skill whatsoever. So option two might be your risk neutral. Well, that means if you're risk neutral, you move your stop losses from 25% of the high of the, if the price falls 25% from the highest it's been since you entered and bought your particular stock, you move it down to 25% since you entered your purchase. So let's say you bought something at 100, you say my stop loss is now going to be 75, whereas in the past it would have been I bought it at 100, it's gone up to 200. If it dropped 25% from 200, then I'll sell. That's how it was before. Now because you're risk neutral, you've moved the stop loss. You'll also make no new purchases because you're risk neutral, the market's falling, you just want things to calm down. Or you'll wait until, say, February or March. There's no rush. Perhaps you'll buy some bond ETFs that I mentioned. That sort of fits into that 7 to 10 year treasuries. Okay, and you'll look at those based on their performance, their low volatility, things like Sortina. You might elongate your holding period to 2 years if the stock is fundamentally sound. If the stock is fundamentally sound, say, well, you know, it's like a house price. we've had a recession, so I'm not going to be able to flip the house this year. We might have to wait 2 years to make a killing. Option three, if you're risk averse, you'd hold cash. You'd sell everything if you're risk averse. Also, you might exit if the stock drops 15% from the high since you purchased it. So you might say, you know what? I'm going to keep a really tight stop because I'm too scared. I'm not going to just hold it going all the way down. And again, you might, if you're risk averse, make no new purchases for now. You'd wait. So there are options. You work out which bucket you're in. Of course, I appreciate what you actually want to do is take no action. You don't want to sell anything because you're risk averse and it says you've got to hold cash and sell everything. You don't want to sell everything. So most people end up in this bucket where they get a balance between risk loving and risk averse. And they say, you know what? I'm okay. I can't control the markets. I've got good quality companies. Thank you, Alpesh. I've got good quality companies. So I'll just elongate the holding time period. Complicates matters, but what to do? Blame President Putin, blame coronavirus, blame whoever you want, but you can't dictate the markets. You can't tell it what to do, no matter how much you want to make a return and have every year like last year. So we stay calm and we look at those three options. We break it down. Hopefully that was helpful. Message me if you want more of this kind of content. If you've got questions, and I'll try and answer them with, as I said, hardcore data that I can get my hands on. Also, if you haven't already, have a look at my campaign for $1,000,000.com, which is to teach 1 million people how to be better at investing. So have a look at that. And if you're on my Great Investors Program, then just email me anytime, any questions you have whatsoever. Okay, so campaignforamillion.com. Have a look at that. And again, as I say, hopefully you found this all very helpful. Any other questions you have, happy to tell you or happy to answer them and get the data to you accordingly. Thank you very much.